Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Idaho Pulse. This is your host, Tea Party Bob, here for another interesting session with one of our favorite people, Ron Nate, president of the Idaho Freedom Foundation. Today, we will be talking about state budget immigration and those candidates that need to be targeted in the coming election. So let's get on with the show and offer a happy St. Paddy's Day to our good friend, Ron Nate.
How you doing, Bob? It's great to be on your show again. It's a weekly thing. I love it. It's great to be on. We're just here a block away from the Capitol in the thick of things, so to speak. And we're watching what's going on in the legislature. We encourage everyone else to do it. But if you're busy, you have a job and you're raising a family, you don't have time to watch everything going on. We do it so you don't have to.
Well, I have to say, from everything I hear and everything I see, you guys are doing one hell of a bang-up job. The problem is, we still have a lot of the problems that you guys are talking about. What's going on?
Well, yes, fascinating things happening. First of all, let's talk about the budget. I know we talk about it every week, but that is the big thing. The government of Idaho spends up all y'all's tax dollars. And so they spent $14 billion last year. $14 billion, and that's with a B. There's 2 million Idahoans, so you do the math there. That's about $7,000 per person on average is getting spent through the Idaho Capitol. That's a lot of money. That's $28,000 for a family of four. Now, that includes federal dedicated and general funds, which are all coming from taxpayers and fee payers in some way or another. But that's a lot of money to be spending. At the beginning of this legislative session, all the legislators are wringing their hands, leadership, the governor's office going, oh man, we have a pending budget deficit looming because the spending has far exceeded the tax collections coming in. Now, I'd want to point out that Democrats are very good at saying this is a revenue problem because we've cut taxes too much. Taxes have never been higher in Idaho. We're getting more tax collections every year than the year before. They're the highest they've ever been. The problem with our budget is not a tax revenue or tax collection problem. It is a spending problem. And spending is out of control. It's far outpaced tax collections. And that's why there's a deficit problem. So one of the things the budget committee did early on was say, you know what, we got to fix 2026. So let's double down on the governor's rescissions. Remember, the governor said we're going to do a 3% holdback on all agencies except education, which happens to be half the budget, but going to do a 3% rescission. Well, the legislature said we're going to do one better. We're going to make it 4% this year and make it 5% next year. So that rescission bill, huge bill, the bill is 1331. It passed the House, it passed the Senate, and the governor has 5 days to sign it.
I thought it was 14. Is it five?
It's 5 days. So okay. Tick, 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 tick. It was put on his desk at 8:15 in the morning on March 11th. So well, what's 5 days call, from that?
He has to call Iaki first to see if it's okay.
You may not be wrong. And so 5 days, excluding Sunday, made it March 17th at 8:15 a.m. As of last night, it was not signed. This morning, he signed it. So, and by the way, you may go, oh, I'm so glad he signed it. If he didn't sign it, it still goes into effect. He doesn't have a pocket veto. So he either had to veto it, sign it, or let it go into law. Well, he signed it because he didn't want to be overruled by the legislature. So, those rescissions are in place. And now we can proceed with at least a little bit of sanity and serenity in the process of approving the budgets. I mentioned last week, we've been tracking them with a Pac-Man image of JFACMAN, which is the Joint Finance and Appropriation Committee, deciding on what kind of budgets we're gonna have going forward. And so they did maintenance budgets. What is needed just to keep the agencies going, you know, not on life support, but thriving, right? Just same as last year, Maybe institute those, you know, keep those cuts going that the governor did, but holding them level, keeping the lights on, keeping the people employed, keeping the bills being paid. And those maintenance budgets actually would provide for $800 million of cuts for 2027. And so we tracked that. We made a graphic and said, here's nearly $800 million of cuts. Now, the budget committee considers enhancements, or what do we need to add on to agencies that they're in desperate need of, or say that they're in desperate need of? And so all the agencies come with their hands out saying, we need this, we need this. Oh my gosh, you know, kids are going to die, puppies are going to drown, rats are going to invade our cities if we don't do all of these things. And so does the budget committee hold strong, or do they start passing bills that add on to all these budgets?
A question for you. Are we talking about 189 agencies?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we need to get the cockroaches out of these agencies, because that's where the problem is.
Well, that would be a budget item there, Bob. So an extermination program, right? So long story short, there's still like three agencies to go on these enhancement considerations. But short of that, the budget committee has recommended over $800 million of enhancements.
So you're back to where you started.
$100 million worth of growth on top of last year's budget. Not only that, there's still more agencies to go. There's still more hand-wringing on, man, did some of the cuts we made, are they too big? Do we need to consider enhancements and supplementals? By the way, hidden in these enhancement bills are supplementals adding back on to 2026 that we're still in. And yeah, we're catching those too. And so not only have they not quite solved the budget problem of 26, they're actually making it a little worse. And so that's what we're doing at IFF. We're tracking all this. We're talking to senators, we're talking to representatives and saying, this is an unsustainable path. You know, in your household budget, if you looked at it and you said, all right, every month we're spending $14,500, but we're only bringing in $13,500, how long are you going to sustain that?
So you're telling me that our legislature is more like a very large person who says he's going on a diet and then orders three helpings of potatoes.
Yeah, that large person burns 2,000 calories a day, but he's eating 2,500 calories a day. What do you think's going to happen?
You're going to get a little fatter.
Yep, little fatter. And you won't see it at the moment, but over time, you're going to look back and go, man, that guy got fat. He used to be thin and fit and working for the family, but now he's on the couch eating.
It only took 7 years for it to double its size.
That's right. And so that's what we're doing. We're tracking all those budget things. You know, I put a little note in the list of items, watch the music play. I think there's some song to that, watch the music play. And you just watch and it just keeps going. The music just keeps going. You can try and change the tempo. You can try and, you know, turn down the volume, but the music just keeps playing. It's hard to not get cynical at times, Bob.
Well, as I always say in the legislature, the beat goes on.
It sure does. Well, let's stop talking about budgets now. I know that's a great way to open a show. Let's talk 10 minutes about budgets. This will get your listeners excited. Well, let's get them excited about other things too. The union bill. It's not even a union buster bill. If it was a union buster bill, yeah, it might be super controversial that we're not going to have public sector unions like Wisconsin did. Remember that? No more public sector unions, no teachers unions, no firefighter unions, police unions who are collectively bargaining against the taxpayer who never makes it into the room, right?
Yeah, and we're paying for it.
That's right. Well, this bill didn't bust any unions. It just said, you know what? If you're going to have a teachers union in the state of Idaho, they're not going to be funded in whole or in part by taxpayer dollars. Taxpayer dollars cannot go to unions or union dues. And so that's all the bill says. It passed the House 45-23.
What happened in the Senate?
In the Senate. You know what? You know what the vote is in the Senate? Zero to one. There are zero votes for it, one against, and that one against is a committee chair who thinks he knows better than the House, better than the governor, better than all the people of Idaho who are represented by 105 legislators. That one chairman, Dan Foreman, is saying, you know what? I don't think this bill gets a hearing.
There, well, I'd like to see who Dan Foreman is getting his reelection funds from. Okay. And how much is coming from the teachers union.
Well, yeah, he says, oh, big things are afoot. I can't tell you, but big things are afoot. Well, let me tell you something else, too. Dan Foreman is not solely culpable here, because there is a procedure in the Senate that says, you know what, if a bill, it's Rule 14E. If a bill has been in the committee for 3 days and the Senate wants to pull it out of the chairman's drawer, they can make that call on the floor of the House. And one of our conservative hero senators, Kristi Zitto, made that call. Made the call from the Senate floor. And immediately, Dan Foreman stands up and makes a motion to excuse the committee from that call. In other words, keep the bill in committee. It was seconded by Lori Den Hartog, a member of leadership, who is totally covering for Dan in this case.
Well, that's another rhino for you.
And so that motion to keep it in committee got voted on by the Senate. Now, do you think the Senate is going to vote for the people in this case or for the committee chairman?
Definitely for the teachers and the committee chairman.
That's what they did. And so I think the vote was 25-9. Nine folks said, you know what, this bill needs to come out of the drawer. 25 of them said, let's keep it in the committee chair's drawer. So there are 20 senators to hold culpable on this too. And I still say that the bill should be voted on in whole. We're not voting on some motion to keep it in the drawer or out, but the Senate ought to be voting on the bill.
So tell me, do you think I'd be smarter if I moved to Wyoming, or should I stay here and keep fighting?
I like to think that Idaho is the last best hope for retaining our freedoms and our principles of limited government and the founders' protection of rights that the Constitution is supposed to provide. So I think Idaho is the place to stay. We just need vigilant watchmen on the towers to say, you know what? We have people moving into Idaho. Let's make sure they bring their conservative values, and let's make sure we preserve those conservative values. We don't want to end up like Colorado. Certainly don't want to end up like California.
And certainly don't want to wind up like Washington with a 9.5% tax on $1 million plus income.
That's right. That's right. So another set of bills, immigration bills. Now, illegal immigration is a thing. It's undeniable. It's affecting Idaho. And we have a lot of folks in Idaho who say, you know what? We don't want to become the next Michigan. We're fine welcoming immigrants through the legal venues and through the naturalization process. I love the idea that America is open to people moving here and patriating themselves and understanding and adopting and embracing the American culture. But what we don't tolerate is illegal immigration that is based on people breaking the law right from the get-go, busting across the borders, and then claiming that America is not America anymore. It needs to be a little subsidiary of all the countries that people come here from. So immigration bills, we support following the law that if you're here illegally, you shouldn't be. So you shouldn't be able to stay.
Where do we stand on the three immigration bills that have been sitting in our good friend, what's his name? Guthrie? Straw.
Jim Guthrie.
Yes.
He's got a drawer. It's not as, it's bigger than Dan Foreman's drawer because it's got more bills in it. And Guthrie just seems completely ignorant or uncaring about what the people of Idaho think. It's just like there's that a switch in his head that hasn't been thrown that what the people think is what the Senate ought to be doing. But no, he's, I guess, worried about big ag, who wants cheap immigrant, even illegal labor from time to time. So he's taking those immigration bills, putting them in his drawer. Yep.
So we're not going to get an immigration bill this time, are we?
It doesn't look like it. I would like to think that the Senate would say, you know what, we are tired of this drawer, holding this drawer business, and let's bring these bills out of the drawer and vote on them. And you know what? I don't think Idahoans would be that distressed or as upset about a bill that gets fully debated and voted on and fails on the floor of the Senate as they are with one person dictating that for the whole state. And so I'm like, let's have the debate. Let's see how the senators vote so you know what your representation is, so you know what to do on election day on May 19th when we have primaries where we get to choose the candidates to run for office in November. We ought to at least know where they stand on votes and not allow Guthrie to protect all of his squishes from consequential votes.
Well, you know, the unfortunate thing is Guthrie has survived three or four challenges, if I'm not mistaken. And the problem is that the people in his district, again, if I'm not mistaken, are pretty much ag. And if you take a look at the people he's getting, his campaign is being financed by, I think it will tell you the whole story that you need to know about why he's holding these bills up.
Sure. And remember, Guthrie is the same gentleman that brought the bill to allow illegals to get driver's licenses.
Oh, we need more of that, don't we?
We don't need any of that. We don't.
I will tell you, I'm scared already going down 95 from my house to the valley with all of these 80,000-pound trailer trucks driving on a two-lane highway. It scares the daylights out of me, I have to tell you, because I don't know who's driving them.
Just think of it as me driving them. You'll feel a lot better.
Uh-oh.
Hey, let's talk about the best bill of the session that I've seen so far. Best bill.
Okay.
850. It is House Bill 850. You know what's so great about House Bill 850?
It's going to pass.
Oh, you're so cute. No, it is the, I think it's the most positively rated bill that we have. You know, we rated on our metrics of freedom, principles of liberty, and limited government. It's a +8. Rarely do you see a bill with a rating that goes beyond 1 or 2, let alone a +8. And this is a bill to repeal Medicaid expansion.
A man after my own heart and a bill after my own heart.
Yeah, it's been introduced. It's House Bill 850. It's sitting in the House Health and Welfare Committee. John Vanderwoude is the chair there. The question is,
The question to me is, has he changed his stripes? Because I've known him to be a rhino for a long time. And I don't see this guy changing his stripes or his horns.
No stripes or horns, huh? Yeah, well, yeah, it's in his drawer right now. And I mean that, literally. I don't know if it's figuratively there and that he's not going to grant a hearing. By the way, I hate using that word, grant a hearing. It's that makes it sound like it's his prerogative, and it shouldn't be. You know, he should schedule a hearing. Mason's Rules of Order, which the Senate and House abide by, say that the chair facilitates the work of the committee and the committee chair prepares the agenda and puts all questions to the committee. He ought to put this to the committee. And it would be great to see a vote on this because Medicaid expansion is the budget buster. It's $1.3 billion in a $14 billion budget. Notice it's almost 10%. This is just expansion. Medicaid expansion is $1.3 billion. The entire Medicaid program is like $5.7 billion. Notice how big that is compared to a $14 billion overall budget.
You know, Ron, I know. I mean,
Yes.
I remember when the Idaho Freedom Foundation, along with my newsletter, the Gem State Patriot, fought about how this was going to be in excess of what they were projecting, which I think at the time was 400 million by their accounting group.
Yeah.
And we both said that's not possible because we've seen what's happened in other states. Now we're at the point where it's a budget buster and nobody seems to want to change it, because once you give something to somebody, yeah, it's really hard to take it back.
They view it as theirs. They say, yes, don't take away my Medicaid. And we can't take away the people's Medicaid. It becomes an entitlement in the possessive sense of the word, but it's not an entitlement. It is a forced program where you forcibly take money from taxpayers, give it to somebody else who's not working, who could be. By the way, remember, Medicaid expansion is not for the single mom. It's not for the children of poor families. This is for able-bodied adults who are not working and not earning above a certain threshold. If they do earn above that threshold, they don't qualify for Medicaid expansion. So think about what that means for work incentives. If I earn money and lose a big health benefit, why should I earn money?
Yeah.
And that's what we see happening. This population is over 100,000 folks on Medicaid expansion. It was sold to Idaho on a lie. Like you said, it was supposed to cost $400 million. Now it's $1.3 billion. We said it at the time. We pointed it out. These costs are completely understated. And when you hear folks say, well, 61% of Idaho voted for it, absolutely 61% voted for it, based on all the lies told them.
That's for sure. The lies came out. This was done on a referendum, if I'm not mistaken, too, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah. So if you ask, well, let me do some math here. If it's $1.3 billion divided by 2 million Idaho folks, that's like $650 a person.
Yep.
So that's $2,500 a year, $2,600 a year for a family of four that they are paying just for this program to pay for somebody else's health care. Do you think families of four want to sign on to that?
I would say there's a serious problem there, but I don't think anybody understands it because it's never related properly.
Yeah, if you went to the door of families in a suburb, families of four, let's say they're all families of four, and you're there on the doorstep with a couple Idaho police officers with you and said, hey, would you like to donate money to the Medicaid expansion program? It's $200 a month for your family. Will you pay us $200 a month for your family? They'd go, no, we can't afford that. Well, that's why I brought the officers, because we're going to use the force of the state to take it from you and fund this program, even though you didn't vote for it.
Well, there goes my property taxes back up again.
Yep. That's the force of government behind this. Think of it as them forcibly taking $200 from every Idaho family to pay for this.
And you said we're going to get back to some normalcy here?
No, not yet. So 850 is the best bill of the session. Will it get heard? No. Will the members of the committee have the guts to vote for it? And will the legislature vote for it? And if it gets to the governor's desk, would he sign it?
No.
We could do one conservative thing this session? We already showed we can't sustain budget cuts. Can we cut taxes, maybe? Can we get rid of a wasteful and immoral program? Just give me one conservative thing. Show me, Idaho, that you have a legislature that matches even a portion of the conservative nature of the people of Idaho.
You know, I feel that you and I may not be here by the time Idaho gets into a reform mode.
I, you know what? We try. We keep trying because we have hope. And that is the heart of a rebellion. Is you have hope. And so you must keep going. Like Samuel Adams says, we need to light brush fires of freedom in the hearts and minds of men and women. It is, and you don't need a majority to get change. You need an irate minority who keeps working and keeps working at it. And that's you, me, and your listeners.
You know what my dad used to say about hope? If you hold a pound of hope in this hand and a pound of dog poop in the other, which one weighs more?
Gosh. Oh, I don't know which one.
I'd say it's the one with the dog poop.
Okay. Now I've lost my whole train of thought. Oh, I testified on a bill today. It was a bill. You know, there was a bill that was to target candidates earlier this session, saying that if you haven't had residency in your district for a year prior to filing, then you couldn't run for office. So that's saying you could be in the state for over a year and a half and still not qualify to run for office, although you're paying taxes, you're driving on the roads, you're doing everything an Idaho citizen does. And that bill failed. Well, this bill I testified on today is a backdoor attempt at doing the same thing. It's looking at homestead exemptions. You know, you get a property tax exemption on your primary residence. It's making that also apply to candidacy. So because the earlier bill failed, Representative Raybould is bringing this, saying, hey, if you have a homestead exempt, if you don't have a homestead exemption for a given tax year, you're qualified. You can't qualify to run for office. Notice that this bill is being run after the filing period, may affect some of those who have filed to run for office and therefore would be disqualified. Now, I don't know who it may or may not apply to, because I don't know everyone's tax situation or homestead situation. Some candidates may not have a homestead. I don't know. But that bill still passed committee. It wasn't unanimous, but there were still a bunch of folks who said, you know what, maybe that should apply to candidates. They also want to exempt people, allow them to have the homestead exemption while they're away on a mission. Great. Noble cause. But they don't do that for doctors who are working abroad for a year. They don't do that for other service that's happening abroad for a year. They don't do that for somebody who's tending to their sick family abroad for a year. Only to people who are doing a mission.
Well, what do they do about the illegals that are applying for it?
Oh, I don't know. It's not in this bill. So anyway, it's a little frustrating to see a bill that is so imbalanced in terms of trying to do weird things with our elections, favoring some groups over others on property tax exemptions, and potentially raising people's property taxes. So
let me ask you a question. Do you credit a lot of what's going on in the legislature because of the 696 lobbyists we have?
Well, I am a registered lobbyist, but not
I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about the lobbyists with the money.
Well, I'll tell you what. I don't know. I trust you that number's correct. That let's say it is over 600. Not all lobbyists are the same. Most lobbyists have clients who are corporations, big nonprofit interest groups, or universities or state agencies, state departments even, that are paid. They have clients that pay them to go and get bills in their interest passed and stop bills that are against their interest. So they have clients who pay them big money. You know, I've heard this, you know, to get a liquor permit carve out so that you can get a liquor license without having to wait in line like everyone else. You can hire a lobbyist to do that for $20,000 or $40,000. Well, that's interesting when liquor licenses are like probably $200,000 to get by waiting in line for them or buying them on the market. So a lot of lobbyists have paying clients who pay them to do things. Idaho Freedom Foundation, our policy analysts and our legislative affairs folks, yes, they register as lobbyists, but we have no client that goes out there and tells us to fight for or against any bill. Zero.
Well, you do have a client. You have the people as a client.
That's true. And that's it. And that is our clientele, so to speak, is that the people of Idaho have fewer voices in the Capitol than the big special interests do. And that's why we are here. We're fighting for principles. We're not doing it to make money or to enrich ourselves. We're doing it for the people of Idaho. That's why we're here. And so, yeah, getting rid of those special interest type lobbyists, short of the constitutional concerns about stifling speech, I think the Capitol would run a lot better if we did not house them there. There is a lobbyist office in the Capitol. Did you know that?
Yeah, I did. I did a little bit of homework, and you asked me about, you know, the number of lobbyists. I believe there's 300 in-state and 396 out-of-state.
Wowzer. That's a lot. Yeah. That's a lot. And if you walk through the Capitol, you'll see them all with their green tags that say that they're a lobbyist and what firm they represent. But what they ought to do is they ought to make them list all the special interests on that tag as well. That would be insightful, wouldn't it?
Oh, I'd love to see that, but I don't think you're going to be able to get that passed. That's still in a drawer from 20 years ago.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, that they do have outsized influence because they are paid to have outsized influence. But that is why we exist as a Freedom Foundation. We are there to push back against the Marxist agendas and the special interests and the crony type legislation that comes out of there. And we want to promote the principles of freedom and liberty based on what the founders wanted so that Idaho can stay free and prosperous. That's what we're working for. I would invite you and your listeners to join us for Capitol Clarity on Thursday in the Capitol at noon. We're going to be talking about medical and health freedom this week. We'll have our own Sarah Clendenin, who's been working on health freedom legislation this session, Dr. Ryan Cole, who was one of the few outspoken voices against all the COVID mandates that came out for those 4 or 5 years. And we'll also have Rob Beiswinger, who's a Republican legislator who's working on health freedom in Idaho too. So those are our three speakers for Capitol Clarity, 12 noon, bottom floor of the Capitol on Thursday.
I'd be looking forward to something like that. You know, Ryan Cole, I have a lot of respect for him. He he stood there and said no to the rules and regulations that were being perpetrated illegally by our governor. And he got beat up pretty badly for it. So anything we can do to help him, I think, is good.
He sure did get beat up for it. I think he was appointed to a board recently. And the headline in the Idaho Miss Statesman was that the doctor who was accused of COVID falsehoods is appointed. I'm like, that's their headline, accused? Like, they've had 4 years to determine that these were not falsehoods. But is journalism journalized? No, they haven't. They haven't done their job. He was proven right all along.
Well, it only shows us that even in Idaho, we have the misinformation newspapers and politically oriented news products that come out both on radio, TV, and in print.
Absolutely. So he'll be a great guest to have on. And can I plug one thing that Idaho Freedom Foundation is doing?
Be my guest.
We are hosting a Firearms and Freedom Dinner on March 27th at the Hotel Renegade here in Boise. March 27th, 6 p.m. And you can get your tickets on idahofreedom.org. Just click on the Firearms and Freedom website to order tickets or a table for that. We are celebrating 10 years of constitutional carry in Idaho. I was involved, and Representative Heather Scott was involved in getting constitutional carry passed way back in 2016 in Idaho. And we were the 9th state to do it. We're celebrating with the president of the Second Amendment Alliance, Greg Pruitt, myself, Senator Christy Zitto, who is a champion for firearms freedom, and also attorney Alex Kincaid, who was involved in that fight too. So it'll be a great celebration. We'll raffle off a few weapons. We've got some medals donation from Money Medals Exchange, so you can get silver coins, commemorative coins. One of them is a copper coin for firearms freedom, and it's signed by Kyle Rittenhouse, who was the one who defended himself with a rifle in the Wisconsin riots and was acquitted of doing anything wrong because he was simply exercising his right to self-defense and to carry a weapon. And so it'll be a great night, good night of celebration and fun, a little bit of trivia, and celebrate our firearms freedom in Idaho.
What is the date of this?
March 27th at 6 p.m. in Boise.
Okay, we have time to get that into the Gem State Patriot this week. Would you tell Parrish to put that advertisement in the newsletter, the Gem State newsletter?
Sure, I'll do it.
All right, because yeah, it'll get it out to another, you know, 2,000, 5,000 people.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, yeah, we'll do that. Okay. And unfortunately, I cannot see all 5,000 at the dinner. We have limited number of tickets, so sign up soon and get some of our limited seats. We'll probably have about 150 folks there. That's as big as the room allows. So sign up.
Well, that's great. We want to fill it up.
We will. It'll be great. It's going to be a great night.
Ron, thank you very much for your time today. We do appreciate it, and I'm sure the people of Idaho appreciate it.
Hey, thank you. Thank you, Bob. Thank you and your team. Idaho Pulse is awesome. Keep going.
You have a great day today. Thank you, sir.
You too.